Howdy, I'm Zoe, reader, writer, friend, and you're listening to Broken Spine Social Club, a literary podcast for readers of words. Each week, I sit down with one of my buds to chat about their favorite book. From high modernism to high fantasy, we cover it all, getting to the heart of what makes good writing great or okay writing high impact. So without further ado, welcome to Broken Spine Social Club. Your membership is approved. Howdy, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Broken Spine Social Club. I'm your host, Zoe Yon. And lads, can I just say how much fun I had recording this week's episode? This week, we're welcoming on my literal best friend, my boo thing, my BB cream, Sarah Height. She has been my best friend for nearly a decade. And look, does it feel a little bit middle school to call her my best friend? Maybe, but that's literally how I always describe her. Like, it's not my friend Sarah. Like, literally, if I'm talking to anyone, and those in my personal life will know this, it's always my best friend Sarah. She's also blonde, which is so cute because I don't know. I have such a blonde brunette dichotomy that I love so much. Like, it's a cultural piece that I think is so important. Betty and Veronica, Blair and Serena. Anyway, I'm brunette, Sarah's blonde, and that has nothing to do with what we're talking about on the podcast today, but just in case you were wondering. Today, what we are talking about is A Court of Silver Flames by Sarah J. Maas, and if you are online or in the fantasy space or the romanticy space, you already know this book, I am sure. It was my first time ever reading one of these books, which, as you'll hear, is a little bit funny considering that it's the last book in a 5-book series. But we just had a great conversation about it. Something to flag you about this week's episode: this was my first ever Broken Spine Social Club recording and my only in-person Broken Spine Social Club recording. So I'll have to ask you to forgive me if the audio is a little bit iffy. It can be a bit loud, a bit grainy at times, but just bear with me. This is a learning curve and we love learning new things, and that's okay. And each journey is a journey. So thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoy. And without further ado, here we go.
Okay. Hello.
Hello.
Sarah Height.
Hi, Zoe Yon.
How are you?
Fabulous. How are you?
I wish my nails were done. Yours really good.
Don't look too close. They're actually really shitty. Sorry.
I told you that when my sister was taking off my nails. She is a dog groomer.
Yep.
And she brought in the file and she was like scraping them off. And I was like, is that the same file you use on the dogs?
That's disgusting. The things we do for beauty.
Anyway, you're my best friend in the whole wide world.
Yes.
And I got in touch with you a few weeks ago to ask if you would want to be on this podcast because you have recently been very much so addicted to reading what I, prior to reading, would have called fairy porn.
Well, you can still call it that after you've read it, because that's kind of what it is.
That is kind of what it is.
But there's a lot more to it, which obviously we'll talk about.
That's true. So we'll get into all of that. But before we do, do you remember when we first met each other?
Yeah, of course I do. Came in for an interview at the Kansas City Kitty. Shout out.
In Fort Collins, Colorado.
Fort Collins, Colorado. Go visit. Cute clothes. Great accessories. Yeah. Zoe started working at the Kitty. I had already been working there. And it was not love at first sight because Zoe thought I hated her at first.
I had moved from Nebraska and I was not used to seeing people with tattoos. Although at that point you only had one.
I really wasn't. It was my nose ring.
It was the septum ring.
I actually had two nose rings at the time. So.
And your baby bangs. You had like little artsy baby bangs.
And I wore purple lipstick.
Yes. But yeah, I was terrified of you. I thought you were like way too cool for school. Also, you're hanging out with Grace Wexler.
Shout out Grace Wexler. I'll call you. I promise.
Not that Grace like did the heavy lifting for your coolness, but she.
Wow.
Maybe she did. I don't know. Now that I know you. This is now a roast.
You invite people on to talk about books.
Just roast
them for an hour.
I make them read and then I just fucking roast.
Oh my God. Oh. Yeah, that's where we met. And we've been best friends ever since.
We've literally been best friends ever since.
We're long-term, but also long-distance best friends.
Yes, agreed. Because that's just true. I don't need to agree to it. It's a fact.
Yeah.
We've been long distance best friends. I think what's just so nice about our friendship, and before we dive into the books, is it really is like you were coming to visit this week. And I've had a really fucking crazy couple of weeks. Mm-hmm, yeah. But even then, the idea of you coming was like, oh, yeah, it'll just be so easy. Like, I'm not worried about it. I'm not worried about fucking going to take my nap, or like, what are we going to do for dinner? How am I going to keep her entertained?
We've actually planned a nap for the day.
Yeah, so. We have. So after this, we're going to take a nap, which brings me into the niche of the story. Not the potatoes, only the meat, quite literally, as we'll find soon.
Maybe.
But first, I want to talk about you as a reader. Like, do you remember the first books that got you into reading? Are you a big reader?
Yeah, I've always been a pretty big reader, but like definitely in my adulthood, it has gone in phases. But I do remember reading specifically, actually, you put it on your page the other day, the book about Mount Vesuvius.
Oh, Magic Treehouse.
Yeah, I loved the Magic Treehouse books, and that one in particular about Pompeii.
Yeah, that was good.
So yeah, those were kind of the first ones that really got me into reading. And then of course, like, classic teen girl, I read like Twilight, Hunger Games. I've never been a big like nonfiction reader, to be honest. I do have a couple. I love this book called The Envoy. It's actually almost was one that I was gonna suggest, but it's like pretty serious. It's about this man named Raoul Wallenberg, who saved hundreds of thousands of Hungarian Jews during the Holocaust. Then I did grad school and hated reading because all I read was academic stuff then, and like had a hiatus from reading. I just like didn't read for a few years. And then recently my husband and I just traveled for 7 months. We took time off from work and I really got back into reading. I actually started reading, how's her name? She writes a lot of like romance mystery novels. For some reason I want to call her Naomi, but that's not right. Anyway, it's like, you know, the old school like 80s, 90s, like thick, chunky,
mystery novels. Oh, yeah. Not Danielle Steele.
No.
Who I think is a crazy woman. I've read some crazy shit about her. No offense to any Danielle Steele fans.
Well, it's not her. I can't remember her name. Anyway, it was, you know, it was like romance novels.
Yeah.
And that's like pretty much what I've read for the past 6 months. And my mom got me into these more like romanticy novels because she started reading Fourth Wing.
Really?
Which is also fabulous.
I didn't know that. That's how you picked this up.
Yeah, my mom was reading it and I was like, I'm not reading it. I judged her a lot. And then I read it and I was like super into it. And then I finished it and I was like, what the fuck am I going to read now? So I Googled and the A Court of Thorns and Roses series came up and I was like, okay.
Very interesting. Well, I think it's what you were saying earlier about being a teenager and like Twilight and the Hunger Games. Like,
yeah,
those were... Like, I have always really loved reading. Like, I was obviously a big reader as a young kid. Those are the first books that I remember, like, if I don't finish reading this chapter, I am going to die.
That is honestly how I have felt about these
books. Me too.
Books.
They're so engaging on their own, but I think, because I know a lot of, like, women our age, kind of millennial, 30-year-old women.
Who probably also read those Twilight books.
That's like, exactly it.
Probably the same audience.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. Okay. I asked you what book you wanted to read, and you said it was the fourth in the series, which...
This is actually the fifth.
Oh,
but yes.
Some podcaster she is.
Stop the podcast.
So the book that Sarah has asked me to read is A Court of Silver Flames by Sarah J. Maas. It is, as we now know, the fifth book in the A Court of Thorns and Roses series. A little bit about Sarah J. Maas. She is an author who began writing kind of fantasy with romance element stories online on kind of like a Wattpad-esque, I think it's called Fiction Press, when she was 16.
Oh, wow.
She sold her first book at 26, which is A Throne of Glass.
Yeah, Throne of Glass.
And just the next year at 27, I think she made it onto the bestseller list. But her big, big hit, what she's most well known for, are the A Court of Thorns. Is it A Court of Thorns and Roses?
Yeah.
A Court of Thorns.
Also known as Akotar.
Akotar. Yeah, we'll call them Akotar here from Alex. That's just much easier.
I actually kind of hate calling it Akotar. It feels really cringy to me, but.
There's a lot that's cringy about this.
That's true.
Like, if that's the base of
it, it is kind of cringy that this is the book that I chose.
So we're going to get into that.
It'll be fine.
Sarah J. Maas has sold 38 million copies of books worldwide, which is truly fucking insane.
Yeah, that's not.
She has what actually something that I think is really interesting about these books is that they're published by Bloomsbury, which is the same publisher that did all the Harry Potters. Oh. So they really have their finger on the pulse when it comes to like mass reading movements.
You were going to say mass hysteria.
Her fan base calls themselves Massassins.
Oh.
So is it Mass? Is it Sarah J. Mass? I don't really know.
I feel like it's Moss.
I feel like it's Moss too. Probably something I should have figured out before recording. Either way, these books are, needless to say, fucking massive right now. Everyone is reading them. They truly are like the next iteration of Harry Potter, particularly for our generation, the next Twilight, the next Hunger Games. Everyone is reading it right now. And there is a rumored Hulu TV adaptation that is coming.
Yeah, I have goss about it.
Give us the goss. Serve it up on a plate.
Serve it up on a platter.
Why don't you?
I heard that Hulu is dropping the series and all the Avatar girlies and babies. I'll just say babies.
Yeah.
Because that's gender neutral.
Everyone's baby.
Everyone's a baby. Everyone wants them to do, like, to have HBO do the series because we want to see some titties. Like,
yes.
Hulu, you're not going to get that.
Yeah, no, they need to get the baps out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then my other piece of gossip is that Margot Robbie was seen having coffee with Sarah J. Maas. I don't think she'd be like starring in them, but I think she might be producing. But also they could have just been like
chilling.
Friends. Yeah.
I think it needs to be said very briefly while we are talking about Sarah J. Maas. The woman is gorgeous.
She is beautiful, yeah.
Like she really has a whole kind of like marketing vibe going on. Like she looks like she could be Feyre.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point.
Yeah, she has this long, beautiful red hair.
Is it red? I thought it was blonde.
It's probably, you know what?
Strawberry blonde.
It's definitely strawberry blonde. Anyway, that's the kind of high, low level information you need to know about Sarah J. Maas. ACOTAR, A Court of Thorns and Roses, is a 5-book series concerning protagonist Feyre, who is a human girl who over the course of the entire series ends up in these high fey lands known as Prithian.
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 Prithian?
Prithian. Prithian? Whatever.
I don't know.
We'll figure it out.
Correct us, please.
Today, we are discussing A Court of Silver Flames, which is the
final book.
Final book.
Fifth
final. Book. Exactly. And
I think it's the biggest book.
Yeah, I think it is too. And I actually know that for a fact because when I went to buy it, I was like, oh, this isn't so bad. And then I picked up this one. I was like, oh, fuck.
Sorry.
This book is an interesting place to start.
It is an interesting place to start being that it's the last book.
Yeah, it's the final book in the series. A couple of things. I just want to give a kind of high-level overview of this book. I should state now that this is not a spoiler-free podcast. We are discussing books in depth.
Yeah.
So if you are currently reading the series and you don't want spoilers, I'd go listen to a different episode.
What's hilarious, though, is that Zoe – we have to avoid spoilers for the rest of the series because you have not read the other books.
This is true. So actually, I already know what happens because I had to read a synopsis of all the other books. But I don't think that takes away from the enjoyment of reading because it's such an immersive experience.
Great. You know what I mean? I'm so glad you have a positive perspective on it.
Thank you. Pollyanna over here. So a little bit of background on A Court of Silver Flames. This book is about Feyre's sister, Nesta. Feyre has two sisters, Nesta, who is the oldest. She's a bit prickly, a bit brash. And Elaine, who is the kind of sweet, innocent.
Sweet and soft.
And soft, exactly. And then Feyre herself, who has been the protagonist of these books up until A Court of Silver Flames, is the kind of heroine, badass. She's a huntress.
I think of her as the golden child.
Perfect. That's a good description. Over the course of the previous 4 books, Feyre and her sisters have all been turned into high fey. They are not so much fairy fairies, but elven type of fey, which means that they are...
They're human sized.
They're human sized. There was a bit of discussion about that earlier. But I think for anyone who's not involved in the fantasy world, they think of fairies as little pixie nymphs.
Yeah, these are not pixie nymphs. They're elves.
Prithian is a fairyland adjacent to the human lands where Feyre and her sisters live. Prithian is divided up into various courts, presided over by a high lord of each court. Each court is related to a season or a time of day. And the court that Feyre finds herself high lady of is the Night Court.
Rhysand is the High Lord of the Night Court. He has an inner circle, which consists of a wacky, zany cast of characters, including his general, Cassian, who kind of leads his armies, his Shadow Singer, Azriel, who is another guy. He doesn't really feature much for me in this book.
Yeah, I mean, he's in it.
Yeah, he's but... in it, you know. And at the time of this book, Feyre, as well as her two sisters, Nesta and Elaine, have all been transformed into High Fae. They are no longer human. They no longer live in the human realm. They are all High Fae, along with Cassian and his buds and every other High Fae person.
And they all live in Valeris.
Yes, that is good. They all live in Valeris, which is the seat of the Night Court. So let's get into kind of setting up a Court of Silver Flames. There has very recently been a war with Highburn. And in the wake of this war, Nesta, Feyre's older sister, has recently been transformed into a High Fae against her will.
Yeah, which is important. It's also important to know that, like, when they were humans, there's a lot of prejudice both ways, I guess, but for humans against Fae. So Nesta and her sisters hated the Fae. Yeah, it's important to know.
Okay, perfect. So Feyre is obviously living her best life as High Lady of this court. She is bent into this lifestyle. Elaine's getting on okay. Nesta, however, is having a bit of an issue. She is going through some serious trauma post-war, post the death of her father, post being transformed against her will into a High Fae, and she is actively self-destructing.
Yeah, using lots of alcohol, using sex as a coping mechanism.
Not healthy.
No,
not healthy. You were saying that every other book in the series is told from first person.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so Court of Silver Flame is told in third person, and then the rest of it's first person from Feyre's perspective, which to me makes sense. Some people are, like, really up in arms about that, but to me that makes sense because the series is, like, from Feyre's perspective other than this last book. So if it's talking about someone else or centered on someone else, it makes sense to me that it would be in third person. So.
I think it also ties in really well with one of the things that we both felt very strongly about this book is that this is not really a narrative, plot-driven story, perhaps, as much as the other books are. This is really exclusively about Nesta and healing from this kind of very horrific trauma.
Nesta's healing journey. It's not, there's not like other things happening really, like
a
war or like anything else with Prithian.
Yeah.
It's centered on Nesta's journey mostly.
There is some very small plot details that would truly probably be the only real spoilers, so I won't even go into them because they're not as interesting to me as like her healing story.
And they're more setting it up next novels from her, I think.
Exactly. So something that I was really not expecting when I picked this up, like, to be very honest with you, I was just expecting a bit of a bodice ripper. I knew it was fairy porn, and I knew there was going to be some kind of, like, zany fantasy story where, you know, they're in a crazy world and there's magic and all kinds of things. But really, once you start reading, it immediately begins with Nesta in her apartment in Valeris being rudely awoken by Cassian, Rhysand's general. Cassian has come to take Nesta down to get a bit of a swift kick in the arse, as we'll say, from her sister Feyre, because Nesta is number one, spending a load of money,
wasting the court's money,
number two, embarrassing the court, number three, they want to help her because she's clearly self-destructive.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I think obviously, like, there's an aspect of, like, she's kind of embarrassing them, but more so, like, especially I think from Feyre, probably that she loves her and she wants to help her. So
and the solution that they've come up with is that Nesta is going to live with Cassian in the House of Wind, which is, like, another estate they have on top of a mountain.
Yeah, the mountain, like, overlooks Valeris, and it's on top of the mountain.
Okay, and she's going to train in the mornings with him physically, and then in the evenings she is going to work in the library, the big sprawling academic library that is in the House of Wind. Mm-hmm. And Nesta is obviously not happy about this. She's pissed off, but she has literally no other option. And so she goes, and bringing it back to that third person thing, I think immediately what we see is someone who is very distanced from themselves, their own emotion, and everyone around them.
Yeah.
So in that regard, it really makes sense to me that Sarah J. Maas would write this in third person.
Yeah, because it's even more of a distancing from
a self.
Yeah. Like if it's first person, you have to write in a way that's very engaged with their perception of the world. And third person, you add that kind of layer of separation.
Distance. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's a really good point. I didn't think about that.
So let's talk about Nesta's trauma.
Let's talk about it.
What is she traumatized from?
A lot of things. I mean, and like you haven't read the other books, so there's like some like nuances of it that maybe you couldn't have picked up on with reading this one. But I mean, they went through poverty. She has a lot of stuff with her dad because he was a merchant. He lost all of their wealth. He was crippled by some debt collectors. He basically just like didn't do anything to help the family. Like he, his three daughters, like he just didn't take care of them. And Nesta just resented him for it her whole entire life and was so upset about it.
There's a lot of guilt there too, I think, because she also didn't help. Like Pharaoh was the one who went out and did, as far as I know, the hunting.
Yeah, for sure. I think in a lot of circumstances, at least for myself anyway, like the things that you hate most in other people are things that you hate in yourself as well. And so I think that totally makes sense.
No, that absolutely makes sense. Like, I think that is very true. Like the things that you criticize in others are the things that you're most unhappy with.
With yourself.
With yourself.
Yeah.
I want to give a really brief trigger warning, perhaps. I think a lot of Nesta's trauma can be very much so classified in terms of actual mental health, psychological trauma. The other piece that she's dealing with is she has become High Fae because she was taken by the Cauldron.
Yeah.
And the Cauldron is this like kind of life source.
It's like the creator of the world.
Yeah.
Like the Cauldron spilled out and it created the world. That's like the legend.
Very Kabbalistic. In Kabbalah, there's like a, it's like a, the vessel, like there's like a jug that like broke open.
Oh,
yeah.
I didn't even know that.
Mm-hmm. Oh. I know.
Yeah. So she was taken, there's some nuances in this, but ultimately she was taken by the King of Highburn and put into the Cauldron to like test it out. And it was a very traumatic experience. Yeah. And then you also have her father's death.
Yes. Which she feels, I don't know if she feels responsible for his death, but she certainly feels like she didn't appreciate him. She never forgave him.
I think she does feel responsible for it. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, yeah. Sorry. Because she, this is, I mean, I don't know because I haven't read these books, but does she save Cassian at the expense of her father?
No.
Okay.
Never mind. That's beforehand.
Okay.
But basically she feels like she has this very grand power that she got from the Cauldron. She was standing right there when the King of Highburn had her dad and he killed him and she didn't do anything about it. Gotcha. And she feels like, I have this power. I should have been able to do something and I didn't do anything.
She's got some really serious PTSD. Like whenever the fire snaps, she imagines her dad's
crackling fire.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So it's really, it's throughout the whole narrative, you're understanding more and more of why Nesta has been so self-destructive.
There's just like a huge amount of self-loathing that she has for herself.
Yeah. And all these things that you and I are kind of picking up on are very real. In 2019 for Time Magazine, Sarah J. Maas wrote, quote, "When I wrote A Court of Silver Flames, I was in the very earliest stages of my own climb out of a pit of despair. So I crawled out of that pit alongside the book's protagonist, Nesta."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think you see that crawling because so much of her healing is literally directly related to mindfulness, cognitive behavioral therapy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And to be honest, that's like one of the big draws for the book for me was that, like, I actually, when I started reading it, I was like, this is like Nesta's perspective. I don't want to read this. Like, I thought I was going to hate it, but I think I really related with Nesta a lot.
Yeah.
In terms of those kind of self-loathing type situations. That's something I've struggled with too. So I think that's probably one of the reasons why I really like this book is because I personally connect with it very well.
For me, I was really surprised at what a beautifully balanced description of like healing from a mental health issue this book contained, this fantasy story contained. So there are a lot of like very material healing mechanisms in this book that are related to things in our own world. Like, for example, Nesta and her friends Emery and Gwyn learn how to do the Valkyrie mind-stilling technique, which is literally just like meditation and mindful breathing.
Mm-hmm.
And then something that really struck me in terms of Nesta's healing, in terms of the writing, in terms of what these books are kind of known for in society, is this idea of physicality.
Mm-hmm.
So where I will start with is, when I first picked up this book, it's not something that I normally read. On page fucking...
Right at the beginning.
Right at the beginning. It's
She's
my...
She's already judging the fucking book.
Oh, I can't. I actually can't wait to tell you this piece, too, that I highlighted my very first note, but we'll come back to that in a minute.
Okay.
On page 30, there's a quote. Feyre is telling Nesta that she's about to go up to the House of Wind and do this training, whatever, 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 and Nesta is not happy. Quote, "That's enough," Feyre breathed. Nesta blinked. Feyre swallowed. Like, there's such minute physical description, and it's like, I don't need all of this.
And I actually, I liked that. Yeah. I think because it puts you in the situation a little bit more. Like, I think physical cues are such a huge part of conversations. And I don't know, maybe I don't really know if this is true, but maybe in other books, I just didn't feel like those were incorporated as much.
Yeah.
It's more about words rather than like physically what you're doing.
Yes.
But I think that physical cues are just such a huge part of conversation.
And at first I was like, fuck this. And then after reading the book, I completely agree with you because I think that minute by minute physicality does a lot of different things. Number one, these books are known for their spice content.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe you said that this is the spiciest out of all books.
Definitely.
It leaves nothing to the imagination.
Like, honestly, I think it's out of not even just A Court of Thorns and Roses, but I've read Throne of Glass, A Court of Thorns and Roses, and The Crescent City. Well, actually, the Crescent City ones are pretty X-y, so.
Ooh.
Anyway.
It obviously, like, a deep physicality serves to, like, help you write erotica. Mm-hmm. Like, you're getting a kind of minute-by-minute description of what's happening in the boudoir.
Yeah, and she really doesn't leave much up for...
No stone is unturned.
No.
Pant is unzipped.
No.
Leather pants are unlaced.
No leather training. No leathers are leathers.
Illyrian leathers.
No siphons are left untied. That's obviously part of it. But then I think building off of those two points, what the physicality does for me, considering that this is a story about trauma, is it brings it all back to Nesta's body. Mm-hmm. And she becomes very grounded, very present, very aware. And that's what helps her move through these stages.
Which is such a real thing for in like real life.
Exactly.
For people who are moving through trauma.
It's like, you know, when you're having a panic attack, list three things you can see, five things you can feel. Like everything is done to bring you back into your body. And I think that Nesta's whole story is about coming back into herself emotionally, but very much so physically.
Yeah.
Like training on top of the mountain, doing the military exercises.
Putting the books away is like even just for me, even just sitting and doing dishes and like really being aware of things, not like trying not to think about, oh, what am I doing for the rest of the day? You're just focused on the soap on your hands and, oh, my hands are getting pruny and the feel of the sponge and the satisfaction of, like, cleaning these dishes. Like, that in itself is a form of meditation to me and a form of, like, bringing yourself back into your body. So I would imagine that shelving books is a very similar.
Exactly. And then finally, I think that the sex scenes are also doing a little bit more with Nesta and Cassian's journey, both as a couple and her own healing journey, than just being, like, raunchy bodice rippers.
Yeah, like taking it out of that like fairy porn trope, I guess you could say. I mean, it is. But also at the same time, just like with in movies and shows, people use sex as a way to expand relationships and develop them. And I think, you know, Cassian and Nesta definitely use it as a form of developing their relationship, but also as a wall.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's just sex that's putting up a wall, being the one to like get up and leave as soon as you can to make sure it's like, oh no, it's just sex. But then also they keep coming back to it and it keeps deep, like, is deepening a word?
It is now.
Deepening. Oh. Deepening their relationship. This. She growled.
Their tender love.
That is one thing that is so cringy to me is the growling and like the snarling and the hissing. Like, what do you think that like looks like in real life? Bared her teeth at him.
Yeah, she's always...
She hissed.
It's the hissing that for me is so like, what the fuck does that... Hissing's bad. Like, hissing...
But I think it's more... It's less of like a... And more of like... We're going to do all of the sex noises for you guys.
I'm certainly getting turned on. Wow, nothing gets my ears going, like sitting on a couch kissing.
But yeah, I mean, back to the point, like it's the sex and obviously it's like, you know, it's hot and sexy, but it's not just about getting your rocks off. They're really developing a relationship in it.
Definitely. And that relationship and all the relationships that she builds end up contributing to her healing. And what I really love about this story is it's not just about Cassian coming in, saving the day. Nesta has a man, knows how to support her in order to let her do the healing herself, which I think is really, really important. When you are struggling yourself, you know, people are like, ask for help, yada, yada, yada. That's really difficult to do.
Yeah.
And on the flip side of that, like being part of a support system and being expected to do that heavy lifting for someone who does need help is a lot of pressure and can breed resentment.
Well, and Cassian does make a really great partner in that he is very supportive of her through her journey, but he also has to grow initially of how he's helping her. Like Amarin keeps saying, keep reaching out her hand. Like when he takes her to the Illyrian camp and she refuses to fight and he's like so pissed off about it and can't figure it out. I think it's just another reflection of real life where people who are supporting those going through mental illness and mental issues also have a journey to go on of like, how do I support this person the best I can?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, the book does so much more than I expected. What I would say to the assassins out there who are not happy with this book is I think that you have to be like, well, yeah, if she changed the perspective, why did she do that? Like, what was the purpose of that?
Yeah.
Why is this one spicier? Like, she didn't just fucking do it for fun.
Yeah.
As far as I know in my own writing, good writing is fucking intentional. So intentional and so deliberate.
Absolutely. And I think that's something in general that I like about Sarah Dumas's writing is that like these books are so much more than just like fairy smut. Like they're not, I mean, obviously there's like that aspect of it. And if that's what you want it to be, then that's great. But I think they can be so much more. They explore a lot more of like human interaction and like relationships than just this like adventure story and like some sexy scenes, you know?
So another thing that I want to talk about on that same kind of note is this idea of fantasy. And the trope of fantasy. So Sarah J. Maas, I don't think that she like came up with the term, but she's certainly been accredited its recent success, romantasy, romance and fantasy.
Beautiful. Romantasy.
So tender.
Tender.
Anyway, there are a couple of different classic high fantasy tropes. Here's what they are. Number one, world building in a secondary fantasy world, Narnia, Hogwarts, the Shire.
Prithian.
Number two, a magic system. Some kind of
magic system.
System of magic. Number three, a large cast of characters. Number four, an epic saga spanning novels of considerable length. So those are the kind of tropes that you will find in any big fantasy series. But this also has me thinking about what else is this a fantasy of? For me, one of the things that literally gave me the ick about this book was how much Cassian like loves his high lady, Lady Feyre. So like it's, again, it's like one of the first fucking things I underlined in this book. Okay, so for a little overview, essentially Feyre is like Cassian's best friend's wife. Like they are friends. They're of course friends. They're in a friend group together, but like, you know, that's really like the connection. And Feyre has painted a photo. A painting of
she's really good
something.
There is a like whole thing out there of like people are like, what if there was actually so bad at painting
like George but Bush?
Everyone is just like, yeah,
that's well, to so be honest, great. From fucking Cassian's cringy ass like view of her, I wouldn't be surprised. She could, her shit probably smells like roses to him. He's so weird about it.
I think you hate Cassian.
Cassian, he wouldn't be my choice. I'm an Edward Cullen.
You'd like Ezreal, I think.
Yeah, I or totally Reese, would. But... which there which was Reese? A throwaway line in this book about a potential sandwich situation. And the way I fucking like barreled through this book to try to find that scene, that doesn't exist except for on unofficial channels.
Yeah, that you sought out.
Oh,
what? You can cut that.
No, that's staying in. I have nothing to hide. Anyway. I get the ick. Like, this is what Cassian talked about, this fucking painting. He thought about that painting a great deal in the days afterwards. How it had made him feel. How close they'd all come to losing their high lady before they ever even met her. Like, it's so...
When you say it like that, it sounds icky.
Yeah, it's icky. The other part that icked me out was they're having their winter solstice celebration. And there's, like, a big party for the whole court. And then there's, like, a private party for the inner circle.
Huh. Zoe doesn't like this. I love that idea. Which we... And also, I think I kind of equate it to, like, the group in Friends where they're just, like, so close to each other. And Zoe fucking hates Friends. But I think having that sense of community and belonging, like, a lot of people really want a group of friends that is so close-knit, like, tight-knit, like that, like a family. Like, you could come over and just chill on the couch all day long and be fine.
No, and that's also, like, I don't have to like it or I can think it's fucking embarrassing. But I think that that is part of the fantasy, which is a lot of readers who – are engaged with this book are our age. And when you hit our age, which is 30, you, regardless of whether or not you're planning on having children or if you have, like, you're in a formal marriage or a long-term partnership, or even if you're just, like, buying a house, buying a car, you're moving in your career, your social life becomes much narrower. You are way more focused on your family and your, like, personal life, I think, than you are on those, like, kind of dreamy college connections.
Yeah.
It's also probably the fantasy of Friends.
Yeah.
Which is, oh, don't worry, guys. Like, we're all still living, like, wildly nourishing, successful personal lives. But we also can maintain this, like, core group of friends that's almost like family.
Well, it literally actually happens in the show Friends. At the end, they all are kind of moving away. They're all moving out of this building that they've lived in together for so long and have, like, grown together in. And the show literally ends with them all, like, part and their social circle, you know, becoming smaller. Yeah,
but that's exactly what happens in the world.
Yep.
And so I think part of the fantasy of this is that those ties don't unravel. You maintain those friendships. You maintain that sense. Like, you know what it's like in, like, college. I mean, I didn't because I didn't have a lot of friends. But what I
Me what either, seemed honestly.
Really nice.
Seemed so nice.
What seemed really cool. Yeah, I definitely didn't have that in college. It wasn't, it wasn't until I moved to Fort Collins.
Yeah, and, like, honestly, it was probably when I met you and, like, our little group formed. That was our time.
And it's, like, you understand why it's so attractive in a book like this because that is such a beautiful experience to share that, like, depth of, like, what are you doing today? I know I just saw you yesterday and the day before that, and I'll see you tomorrow, but, like, let's get coffee right now. Or let's just, like, sit on the couch and not talk to each other. Yeah. Like, so I love that fantasy. Are there any other fantasies in this book besides maybe the sexual ones?
Sexual.
Sensuel.
Yeah, actually, you know what? I just thought of something. The literal one note that I wrote in my Kindle. Let me pull it up. What this book taught me is it takes 500 years for men to become emotionally literate. So I think that is for people who date men. This book has this fantasy of, like, women meeting these men that are emotionally available and emotionally literate, can handle high stress situations but still maintain their relationship. It's actually, I think, why one of the fantasy aspects of it that they are older. Like, some people are like, wow, it's really cringy that, like, Cassian's 500 years old and Nesta's 26 or whatever. But it's like, well, yeah, emotionally and mentally, women want someone who is 500 years old because they're wise. And, like,
the truth of that statement has rocked me to my core. Great. I did read in that Time magazine piece, the writer is like, male characters you write are so, like, good,
stable,
like, stable, and it's really sweet. She attributes that to her husband Josh. Aww. Who she has been married to since they've been together since they were, like, 18.
Wow.
They're married, they have two kids, and in this article the guy's like, in the middle of the Zoom call, Josh comes in with a fresh matcha latte for Sarah James.
Oh my god. Like,
king yeah shit. They must also be having kinky sex.
Yeah, probably. I think she said that some of it is, like, from
Sarah James.
Sarah.
You go, girl.
But yeah, I think that's definitely one of the fantasies, is, like, someone being in a very healthy relationship.
And
and even someone leaving a very unhealthy relationship, yes. which is what happened with Tamlin and Vera.
Mm-hmm.
But again, that's for a different time. But.
No, that's exactly spot on. Or I think too, this idea of, I'm trying to think of how to say this. Like, so much of women's work is so fucking emotional. Mm. Like, emotional labor is like actually a real thing.
Yeah.
And the fact that she can just focus on healing herself
mm-hmm.
without having to also like take care of Cassian's feelings or yeah. something. That's a beautiful.
Yeah. I actually just thought of something else mm-hmm. and it goes along with that, like core friend group, like being able to have that core friend group. Yeah. Female friendship mm-hmm. is a huge thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think also too, like Nesta at the beginning, like we know that she kind of just doesn't really feel like she fits in with the Night Court. They have kind of their own group, but she really creates her own friend group with Gwen and
Emery. Yeah.
And I think there's something really special about that because they all are women. And maybe that stood out more to me because in the later of my 20s and into my 30s, female friendships have been harder and harder to maintain. Like yes. You and I are really lucky that we have a very close relationship, even though we live really far away from each other. We've mm-hmm. been able to maintain that. We can pick things up, but like having female friendship, especially when you live somewhere with that person or with that group of people and like being able to go get a coffee and like
exactly
go work out together or go shopping or garden or, you know, whatever it is you want to do. Like being able to do those things with another woman is a very special thing to me.
That scene where they're having the slumber party.
Yeah. And like, yeah, it's a little bit cliche, but yeah. like also it is kind of that. It actually, I just thought like it kind of reminds me of like the Barbie movie.
Yeah.
That like I feel like a lot of women who played with Barbies when they were younger, it gave that like nostalgic feeling of being a part of that and like being able to relate to each other. And I think that was really special. So
I thought what was so sweet is at the very, very end when they're on that death mountain.
Uh-huh.
And they've been so afraid to be vulnerable with each other. And they all just love and accept each other because yeah. that is what real beautiful friendship is just hearing and being seen and being heard yeah. and seeing.
For sure.
So the other note that I wanted to highlight, it's the very first thing I highlighted in this book. It is page 25. Cassian is in the villa where High Lady Feyre and High Lord Rhysand live, and he's been instructed that he has to go get Nesta and take her up to the House of Wind and do all this fucking shit with her. Yeah. And he's like,
whatever great. For you, Feyre.
But he like tries to hug Feyre, and it says, no matter that Feyre already had a shield around herself, courtesy of Rhysand that had been there at breakfast too. And Cassian's like, what the fuck is up with this shield? What do I have right here?
This woman is for sure pregnant. Yeah, I feel like if you didn't know that Feyre was fucking pregnant when there was a shield around her.
Exactly. It's like, you don't just
put I don't want to say you're shield. Dumb, but no.
I don't want to say that this podcast isn't for you, but
you're an idiot.
You're not an intellectual.
No, I mean, yeah, I'm actually kind of surprised that you picked up on that without having read the rest of the series, I guess. That sounded like I was going to say that I think you're really dumb.
I'm actually really surprised that you picked up on that. That's so cute.
That's really good, Zoe. Good job.
Good girl.
It's
fun. Yeah, she's pregnant.
Yeah, it's in the book.
I know.
Oh, I thought you said, is she pregnant? I was like,
bitch, what did I just say?
Oh my God.
It has been announced that there is another Court yep. of Thorns and Roses coming. It'll be really interesting. I feel that there's a lot of like, ooh, like there are things going on with Elaine in this book.
Yeah. People are saying that it's going to be about Elaine.
Yeah. That's
and dealing with Lucien being her mate.
Yeah. So, okay. Yeah. So Lucien's her mate. Clearly she's got a little bit of a thing for
Azrael. Yeah. Lots of people are going to have a lot of opinions on that.
I keep wanting to talk about the rest of the series, but. Well, we will be bringing you back for TBD. The rest of the series, TBD, because I truly, really, really enjoyed reading this.
Yeah.
I think that this was an excellent pick out of the series. I am sure that even after I read the rest of them, I will recommend this one to people because I just think she's doing something very interesting with the fantasy genre.
Yeah.
It's such a personal, deeply relatable
yeah.
story that I think people should read. But I love that it was an entertaining story, and it also was just a very beautiful story about healing and trauma.
Yeah, you know, I told Zoe at first, I was like, okay, I feel like I want to choose A Court of Silver Flames, but I'm like embarrassed that that would be the book that I choose right now. But I love having this conversation because it reminds me that like this book was so much more, again, than fantasy porn, basically. Mm-hmm. It can be fantasy porn if that's what you want it to be, but like for me it was a lot more. I'm really glad that I chose this book now. It's not like my favorite book of all time, but right now it is my favorite book, mm-hmm. Which I think is so cool. Like you can have so many.
Yeah, through different times. Like that's what's beautiful about it. To close out, I want to talk about your dream Avatar cast.
Please see Zara DeGroot for the perfect casting of Avatar.
Yeah, that is the cast. That should be starring James Charles.
James Charles as Pharah.
Who I forget who plays. Oh, Pete Davidson as Rhysand.
As Rhysand and Beans as Tamlin. So
it's fucking Wendy Williams as Morrigan for me.
Yeah, shout out to Zara on that one.
Yeah, that's a fucking hilarious thing. I'll share that on the Instagram.
So my gosh, I don't even know. I think generally with casting, I would hope that they use people who are less well known.
Yes.
I don't really want to see like Saoirse Ronan in it.
Yeah.
Do you?
I kind of want to see her in everything, but like that's a general thing. That's more about
she's great. I fucking love Saoirse.
That's more about her than me.
But yeah, I kind of want to see people who are off the map.
I would love a little bit. I do totally agree with you. Like I'd love to see some like new talent, maybe someone who's been in like was like kind of a side character in like a Netflix teen show or something.
Yeah, definitely younger people. I think yes, probably. Although I will say that for like the High Lords, they can look a little bit older because they are older technically, but they're still youthful.
I'd like for the High Lords, like that's where you can bring in your powerhouses. Like that's where you're spending your casting money. Like,
yeah,
you know, Liam Neeson or
Liam Neeson as Rhysand.
I meant like Baron or the other one.
I don't know. That's an interesting thing because like, is Baron old? Does he look like he is one of the oldest?
He's got a kid. Yeah. I don't understand the aging process.
I don't. No one does. It's magic. So that's like, I'm like, is he, does he look old? Is he like a silver fox?
That's what I was imagining him as.
Yeah.
Actually, no, that's a lie. I was imagining him as like a kind of decrepit old fucker because he's a bad guy in this book, kind of.
Yeah.
What I will say is I was kind of picturing a Charlize Theron type of woman for Nesta.
Yeah, I could see that. I did have someone that I thought about the other day. Oh, I think someone recommended Sophie, what's her name? Joe Jonas's ex.
Oh, ooh. So
what's her name? Sophie something.
Jonas?
They're divorced, okay? Actually, I don't know. Whatever. That doesn't really matter. But I think it has to, they have to have that edge to them for sure. And I feel like her eyes definitely would have that kind of edge. But again, she's like super well known. Like, I don't know if I really want someone who's so well known in it.
Yeah, I agree.
But then also, if it's not well known, you run the risk of them being a shitty actor. So
that's literally true. Charles Melton from Riverdale is now in that May December movie with like Julianne Moore and Natalie Portman.
You love that show.
Yeah.
Maybe you should have done a podcast on that show.
Yeah, I'd fucking love to if anyone watched it as much as I did. No, I don't know a single other person who's watched the whole thing.
I think that should tell you a lot, Zoe.
Yeah, that I'm fucking operating in 5D consciousness and everyone else is stuck down here in 3D. Oh, plebs. anyway, is there anything else that you would like to say about this book, about this series, about anything? This is your
just
platform.
That, like, maybe if you're like, I don't really want to read that, maybe just give it a try. If you don't like it, that's fine. I know people who aren't into it, but I think it does have more to offer. And thank you for reading it.
Oh my God. Thank you for suggesting it. I really am delighted. I really, really enjoyed it. Lovely. And we will have you back to do the rest of the series.
I would be honored.
And then maybe the entire Sarah Mossiverse.
That would be great. I love it. Thank you.
I love you. Thank you. Have a lovely rest of your day. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks so much.
Ugh, I could chat about fairy smut all day, but I won't subject you people to that. Instead, what I will say is thank you for joining me and Sarah this week on Broken Spine Social Club, a literary podcast for readers of words. If you enjoyed this week's chat, please do me a solid by subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast fix. And if you just need more Broken Spine bookish content, do go ahead and give the pod a follow on Instagram at BrokenSpineSC. Join me next week for more good book stuff. And in the meantime, keep reading whatever keeps the pages turning.